Hey, on this week's episode of Breaking the Panel, we've got Idris Elba coming to a comic book movie. Ryan Reynolds, surprise! This is a crowd with Deadpool. And this is what it sounds like when worlds collide. We have Teen Titans and the Justice League. These headlines and more coming up with your full frontal nerdity right now.
The year is 2015, and we, the geek, the nerd, the comic book fan, have inherited the Earth. The comic book now owns pop culture, and that's a worldwide phenomenon. Film, television, literature, even music. These days, it's all about the comics.
I am Arrow.
I'm Batman.
Supergirl?
What does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand for, Agent Ward?
I am Iron Man.
And I am Spider-Man.
Hulk.
Smash.
We're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
Hey, I am Epic Boss McFall, and riding along in this train with me is Epic Boss Klotz. Why not?
Yeah, upgrade.
Everybody's Epic Boss. You're an Epic Boss, and you're an Epic Boss. So why not keep it up the thing, returning again to the station or to the channel? What are we now? We're a podcast. We've been doing so much network things and everything else. We are just a podcast here. Epic Boss Wisdom.
Well, hey, guys.
Do we start yet? No. Yes, we started yet.
A.K.A. The Word.
The Word. So, yeah, we've been getting some things together this week, and there's always all kinds of news, and we're looking for you to send in headlines to us, stuff you'd like to hear us talk about. And I was very excited to get this a headline about Idris Elba confirmed for The Dark Tower, because that's not Marvel. And finally, the biggest complaint people have had is that, oh, you guys are Marvel fanboys. Well, yes, we are. But we also love DC. I love some of the independent stuff. I've read all kinds of different comics. I know you guys have as well.
To be fair, we cover a lot of the Marvel stuff because they have a lot of stuff going on.
That's true. That is
all right?
Very true.
So, you know, DC and all you indie comics out there, you step up your game. So we'll start covering you.
I heard, I think it was DC on Screen was talking about the comic lines, just Batman alone in the DC universe right now, how there's like 10 different books and the continuity is not the same in each. And I was like, yeah, I can't get behind something like that. I need continuity. I need things to make sense. And I get when you have a Dark Knight storyline, that's a whole different universe than Batman Returns or, you know, Batman, whatever. But when you have so many different ones going, that's the problem I had with The Punisher and Marvel back in the early 2000s was I was going to start subscribing again, and there were so many different Punisher lines that I was like, nah, too hard, too much, can't do that. But Wisdom, you read a lot of DC, don't you?
I do. DC is where I cut my teeth. My very first comic book was the last issue of Crisis on the Infinite Earths. And I read that thing cover to cover about a bazillion times and held it until I was 14 or 15. There was no cover on it, and all the pages were tattered.
A little sticky, maybe?
No. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, jeez.
No.
No.
Sticky with tape for hair, Charles.
It wasn't an Image comic, McFall, okay? It wasn't an Image comic.
Oh, God, right? Savage Dragon and his counterpart, where it was like Savage Bikini. What? It was like, Yeah, Image Comics, man. In
the 90s. Just come from an age of the Marvel swimsuit issues, guys.
Yes, me
too.
Let's
not just give all the credit to Image.
No, Image took it to 11.
Yeah, but
Marvel
every
definitely had
issue
it.
Of Image Comics in the 90s was like a swimsuit edition.
Yeah. Yes. Idris Elba comes to Dark Tower. I was fortunate enough to read the first book in Dark Tower, in the Dark Tower comic, because I believe, I know I'm getting this wrong, but for some reason, my mind tells me that this is somehow related to Stephen King?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I thought so, but for some reason, I thought it wasn't. And then I got into the first book, and about halfway through, I'm like, this is kind of cool. I'm a little confused, but let me make sure they have the others. This is from the public library, and they did not have the others. So I just stopped reading it because I'm like, nope. As soon as I get in and I want more answers and I can't get them, this is going to drive me crazy. So I actually stopped. But the Dark Tower has been loitering, lollygagging, let's use that word, around in an adaptation development hell for many years now. And fans of Stephen King's epic Western fantasy will finally be relieved to hear the movie is on the verge of being greenlit and should be coming to cinema soon. This is almost like clickbait, right? It's not actually saying, yeah, it's in production now. All they do have the official signs that it's going to be in production. It's like, don't talk about Verge.
It has a release date.
It does have a release date, and they actually cast Idris Elba as Roland Deschain. So I wonder what people think about that. Roland being the main character in the book.
Well, digging into this article, which is from Inquisitor.com, by the way, there's a quote here. Well, one of the big issues here, obviously, is that the character in the graphic novels and in the novel, original novels, was Caucasian. And Idris Elba is not. Newsflash.
What?
Exactly. And, you know, Idris Elba is not, you know, new to racial outrage in regards to his, you know, his castings. But Stephen King came out on Twitter and on 11th of December last year and said, "To me, the color of the gunslinger doesn't matter. What I care about is how fast he can draw and that he takes care of the Ka Tet," which I assume is a reference, the Ka Tet part there. I think that's really important that the creator, because, you know, there is some racism in the content, which is, you know, noted in this article. And so this might give them the opportunity to explore that theme from the original work a little more easily without it seeming oppressive. You know what I mean? Because he will be the protagonist. And so he'll probably be on the receiving end of some of that racism. So it could be pretty interesting. But this is sweet. Like, I'm really excited about this. I have wanted to see Idris in something really good again for a long time. And I hope he crushes this, because, I mean, this is clearly, if the first film is successful, this is clearly going to be a big series, because there were a number of books and a number of graphic novels and whatnot. So this could be our... Go ahead, Chris.
No, I think the negative that I've seen mostly about this, and I'm going to have to
speak, boy. Yeah, you're on a podcast.
I'm a little incompetent in this because I haven't read the books, but the biggest portion of that outrage that's coming, it's not the fact that they're changing the character from black to white like we saw with Star Wars, The Force Awakens, where, oh my God, there's a black stormtrooper. It's not just that knee-jerk reaction. Mm-hmm. It's that in these books, that race is so integral to the character and the way it's portrayed. So the creator came out and said he doesn't see a problem with it. And when the god of that world says he doesn't have a problem with it, I don't have a problem with it. And maybe what they'll do is they'll just turn that racism, you know, they'll just do a 180 with it and make it go the other way. But in my understanding from what I've read in comments and in other groups is that that's a pretty integral thing because it makes those racial interactions in the stories that play key points.
Okay, so that might be, and then they might flip everything. But here's the thing. This is... I didn't read the book. So this was actually a book called The Gunslinger written in 1982. Okay. Then they became a comic book. I'm not sure what year it became a comic book. It's not here in the article that I'm scanning through. And I can tell you from other comic experiences, Dilbert being the main one in mind that I'm thinking of, where I really read everything that Scott Adams did, and including the master books where he goes and puts his notes and stories behind the strips. And there's one famous strip that there's a security guard in office. It's the only time the security guard ever really makes an appearance. It's on a Sunday paper. And it's this joke about stealing stuff out of people's desk drawers. Well, he just pencils it, right? That's how comic artists do for the comic strips in the newspapers. And a colorist is somebody that's hired somewhere else down the line, and they just fill in the colors. And so he just drew it, and the colorist made the security guard black. And it was just this thing, because while he was white, it was just a diversity thing. They weren't thinking about it, but then the punchline is he's stealing stuff out of the drawer. And he's like, man, I took so much grief out of this. And that's something I was going to say might actually have applied to the book, the comic book here, is race may not have been too much of an issue. I don't know. But here's the other in the book, in the novel, where it becomes, because we're graphic novelizing this thing, you have to see it. Maybe they chose white. I don't know how much Stephen King said there when they did the comics. But here's the other thing you have to understand about this comic book. This is a science fiction magic meets gunslinging. I believe there's alien type thing. I don't know if they're aliens or if they're just, when they talk about race, think Star Trek race, not Earth, white, black, Chinese race, right? It's blatantly, you know, this is a race of these people and this is a race of that people. And it's that kind of thing. So you can still have race interactions without being the honestly small-minded, stereotypical black-white stuff that we tend mm-hmm. to fuss yeah. about in America.
Not actual race.
You know, not color your skin race. Actual, your body parts are totally different race. I mean,
right.
Yep. I don't know. I think some of the stuff can be I think it can be done. And again, I go back to my argument. When will we rise above and stop caring about skin color and looking at the acting and let the writers worry about writing the good story and judging the story if it's good? And not go, oh, he's black. And he won't. Oh, shut up.
I'll tell you, I would watch a remake right now, a 2016 remake of The Song of the South. And the only person that has any part in that is Idris Elba, and he plays all parts. I love Idris Elba that much.
Oh, you're not kidding. You know, there's movies that'll come on, the previews will come on, and my wife and I are sitting there going, that looks so stupid. Oh, wait, there's Idris Elba. We're going to go watch that.
We're going to watch it. Exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of, Luther season 3 is fired up. It's going to be hitting BBC here very, very shortly, which means it'll be hitting Netflix here in a few months. I'm so excited. That's such a great show.
You guys saw that Black Mirror is getting a third season, right?
Yep.
I saw that. Oh, man. I am so excited.
I don't know if I'm excited or not. It's such a brain twist, man.
See, I love stuff like that. I love – because that's art. You know what I mean? That is art. It makes you question your reality. It makes you question your place in the world. It's entertaining, and that's great. But it's also deeply philosophical. And I think there were some great statements that were made. The weirdest part, though, was that one episode with the British PM and how that actually kind of happened. You mean
the first one?
Yeah. And it's like, didn't it come out after that aired that actually kind of happened?
I don't know.
With the current British PM? Because I think there was something that came up where in college for a hazing thing, he had put his member, if you will, into a
member of parliament.
Yeah, his member of parliament, you know, for a hazing thing. And that is so in line with that first episode. I'm trying to figure out, you know, chicken or the egg thing but here, which came first.
The difference truly would be, and that's why the story was so impactful, the difference truly would be government head, 40 years of service and knowledge and wisdom, or a drunken frat boy at 18.
Oh, yeah. I know. But it was just so weird that how, like... Yeah, because if that came out after that episode aired, that is just wild, you know, the wacky world, things coming together kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But yeah, no, that show was fantastic, man. I really liked the way it approached some of the subjects, you know, how much is too much, especially in regards to technology. The other episode of that show that I really loved was the one where all of your memories are recorded and you can go back through them.
That, man, that was one of the best episodes I ever did because it's just the dangers of reality and being obsessed with things and not being able to.
It ultimately destroys their lives, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? Of yeah. everybody involved in that episode, well, at least the main characters involved in that episode, it destroys their lives because you do obsess over that stuff. And I feel like that's almost got to be a direct statement on Facebook and things like Facebook, social media, where we put everything out there. And when you can go back and look through it, oh, man, it is not good.
Yeah. Some of it. I think what we should learn is how we do things. But what I took away from that is that the obsessive compulsive nature that's in most human beings, or in a lot, and I know it's in me, and I'm just identifying with the mm-hmm. male protagonist there, and just there was no room for forgiveness. There was no room for patching things out, working things out, whatever, because you physically see a recording and you can't get past what you see.
Oh yeah.
You know, that's man. And I love how they ended that episode, but we'll
it was so soul crushing. Yeah.
I'm not sure about this Black Mirror thing because you're right. They're great stories, but all of them are soul crushing. Every last one of them. And I binge watched like 5 of them in a row. So I had a very dark couple of weeks after that.
Yeah.
It's like Dante Hicks said, life's a series of down notes. That's why Empire worked, right?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. All right. Clotch, you want to take this next one? Or, Wisdom. I don't care who takes it.
Which way, on Deadpool?
Yeah, we're on Deadpool.
All right. So everybody was invited to a screening of a scene from Deadpool. It was one of those things like Guardians of the Galaxy did it last year when you go to your local IMAX theater and you get to see a scene from Guardians of the Galaxy, lines and posters giving away lots of freebies. What nobody expected was to get entertained by the entire movie, to be followed by a Q&A with Ryan Reynolds and the cast and crew. And that is what all of these people were... All these people were treated to, and the movie went over like gangbusters.
How do you get invited to something like that? Because I'd go.
Right place, right time, man. I think it's just like with Quentin Tarantino's movie, where cast members are randomly showing up to the 70mm showings of The Hateful Eight. So, right place, right time.
So let's a little side note for a second, because I heard this as a blip on DC on Screen. So 70mm is that's not how we used to film films, is it?
No, it is.
No.
It is. That's how that was the film that we knew before digital age came along. Is that right? Yes. Okay. So Hateful Eight, Quentin Tarantino being the auteur that he is, and I really like a lot of his stuff, he wanted people to see this in an old-fashioned kind of way. Mm-hmm. So he actually... I don't know where the money came from, but he actually spearheaded a bunch of major theaters reinstalling.
There's been a collaboration between a handful of people in Hollywood.
Okay.
I believe James Cameron was involved. I know Tarantino was involved, and there's a couple other people. And basically what they've done is they've invested in the medium so that it persists. Because Kodak being the biggest producer of film in the world, Kodak is about the headquarters are in Rochester, New York. They're about 2 hours away from me. So this is something that I talk about on a fairly regular basis because it's a pretty big issue for this area. Kodak has lost almost all of their market share because nobody buys film anymore. You know, nobody buys cameras. No, and the big thing was the movie industry, they moved to digital because it's so much cheaper. Even though those cameras are horrendously expensive, it is so much cheaper to film digitally, and then it's so much easier for them to store everything.
So if you have to refilm, you don't have to burn the tape that you had. You actually just more memory. That's all you need.
And so the whole thing is for 70mm, there's only a handful of companies in the world that have ever made film on this level because it's a pretty intricate process, and it's specialized. It's very specialized, and most of those other firms are gone now, as far as I know. And I think Kodak's like really the only one. And so what they did is collectively, through making a few films recently and also investing, like doing some money raising and investing, they've propped Kodak up to be able to continue to make this film for a long time, decades, I believe. Like they've set it up so that they're going to make this film for years. They're going to be able to stockpile this film for years, so it will always be available, at least for now going forward, which is a really big – I think it's one of the biggest deals in Hollywood. Hollywood gets a lot of flack for being kind of heartless and not being about the art and being about just the profits and all that stuff. 70mm film is hugely expensive. There's almost no reason fiscally, from a conservative fiscal perspective, to prop up the medium. But they're doing it out of love for the art and the medium that really made film what it is today. If we didn't have all those decades of 70mm film, we wouldn't have modern films. They've preserved it, if you will. And they've ensured that the company that makes it can continue to make it. And it's a pretty huge deal.
That sounds like a especially from an art standpoint, movie making standpoint, definitely, and economic standpoint, it sounds like a really big deal. And the reason I bring it up is because there are still rumors that are being had, but there's rumors that because of that collaboration and because there are areas that have these projectors, that we may see stuff like Deadpool, Batman versus Superman, because I refuse to say it the stupid way like they want me to, and Avengers, those kind of things, that we may actually see 70mm versions of these things come out. And I think that could be very different take, experience-wise, on these movies.
There's a 70mm version of Star Wars as well.
Oh, see, that's cool.
See, now, actually, there was some controversy. I don't think we talked about this. Maybe we did talk about this in the Star Wars episode or previously, but there was some controversy leading into the holidays because Tarantino had booked the Cinerama Dome in L.A., which is a place that shows 70mm films in the traditional medium, in the traditional fashion, up on a big screen. You know what I mean? Yeah. Old school theater, basically. He had booked it for 2 weeks from the start date of Hateful Eight forward, where it would be exclusively Hateful Eight shown there. Star Wars, Disney comes in with Star Wars, and they had the 2 weeks leading up to it because it came out 2 weeks before Hateful Eight. Right. Well, they asked the company to bump and not honor Tarantino's contract with them. They said, we'd like you to show Star Wars exclusively for a month.
So they kind of puffed up their big boy chest and said, oh, they Disney. Well,
they absolutely did, because they went in and they said, we'd like you to do this. And do you say no to the biggest film of, you know, the last few years? Do you say that? Oh, actually, the biggest film of all time currently. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
What did they say?
They did it. They had to do it.
And,
And see, that's the thing. I'm sure that Disney didn't ask. I'm sure Disney said, well, if you don't do this, we're not going to give you any of our films going forward.
I don't think they had to do something like that. I think they just make the suggestion.
Well, I know a friend who owns a theater here in Atlanta, and coming up to it, he was talking about how Disney, with Star Wars, said no free for two or three weeks. I don't know what the exact time frame was. No free passes, which we know to expect. When you get free movie passes, they're not good for the first 2 weeks of any opening movie, typically, depending on what level you get. Blah blah blah. Mm-hmm. But even though the movie theater employees could not see it for free for the first 2 weeks, no letting people rent out the theater, like a office building sometimes will say, hey, we want to rent your theater to let our entire crew watch Star Wars. We'll pay you for it, but only our people get to fit in because we have 80 people. They'll fill in two theaters, mm-hmm. whatever. None of that. I mean, they had so many stipulations about that. Movie, and that if you stepped over the line, if they somehow, I don't know how they do it, but they caught one of your employees sneaking in and sitting there watching the movie, they'd fine the movie theater a massive amount of money. It's like,
oh yeah,
wow, that's a lot of control over something you know is going to go gangbusters.
Yep.
I don't know where it comes from. I'm not saying it's bad, but it's a little unusual for me. It struck me as odd.
You have to realize that films in recent years have been in a weird spot. I mean, the big films are doing better than they've ever done in the past, but all the run-of-the-mill films are doing garbage in comparison to how they used to go. People just don't go out to the theater like they used to. They go out for the big blockbusters,
right?
But they don't go out for the art films. They don't go out for the rom-coms as much unless it's like a smash hit. Like they don't Deadpool. Go out for... Well, yeah. So it is in every studio's prerogative to sit there and say, well, we've got a hot property here and we want you to do all these things, because they absolutely want to crush box office numbers. They want to make sure that they're putting asses in seats for every showing for X amount of, you know what I mean? Like, they want to make sure that everybody is a paying customer, not even just for the money. I mean, the money is a part of it, but just for, I mean, the publicity and the prestige that you get from producing those kind of sales numbers is a huge deal. So like when you let a theater, you know, when you let the employee see the film without paying, when you let somebody rent out, you know, the whole theater and X number of seats go empty, that doesn't help fuel all the hype. You know what I mean? You want people to have to buy in to boost the numbers, and you want people to sit down and see the film hopefully multiple times to boost your numbers.
Speaking of, as of today, I googled it, $1.87 billion.
Oh yeah,
is what this movie's pulled in.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars being that movie. We got to get back to Deadpool, but we're staying on this for a second.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's exactly why Cinerama can't say, okay, no, we can't, we have a contract. They're going to say, okay, sure, you know, and they don't have to, like, there's varying levels of power, right? When you're as powerful as Disney is, you don't have to demand things so much anymore. You just
suggest.
You suggest, and then it's done. It's kind of like, it's when you watch a mafia film, you know, there's the middling lieutenants have to yell at people and tell them what to do, but the big boss just makes a suggestion and it happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's exactly how it is with these big companies, because you cannot afford to pass up the revenue from something like Star Wars.
I think as we go forward, one of the interesting things we'll see, sorry, Paul, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's absolutely.
Is I'm more worried about a tentpole saturation than I am about a comic book property saturation. And for anybody that doesn't know, a tentpole movie is the big, that's the big movie that everybody's going to go see. And typically when we were growing up, I mean, you were seeing that in the summer and you were seeing it at the holiday.
Yes.
Two or three a year. And if you look at the lineup for 2017, just in comic book properties, the tentpole number is like, there's 10 movies coming out in 2017. And you're going to have Disney, you know, 3 months in a row probably is going to have a tentpole in each of those months that's going to start competing with its brothers and sisters. You're going to, and that's, again, that's just comic book property, let alone everything else that comes out that year. And I think that's where you're going to start seeing the oversaturation of the market, and that's where they're going to start losing revenue.
In a slightly, like...
Well, I want to argue that point just slightly, is... You see the loss of revenue because there's only so much revenue that can go around. And when you try to grab all the cookies in the cookie jar, you're going to lose some of them because there's only so many cookies in the cookie jar. So I agree with you about the tentpole saturation, I think the bigger picture is the reason we didn't have that before is because, one, it was more expensive to make movies, and Disney would only release one movie a year. And that'd be that summer blockbuster. That's where summer blockbuster term came from. I remember it was somewhere in the 1980s when Batman came out. And the same year Batman came out, the Michael Keaton Batman, if I remember right. It's either the same year or the next year. But I think it was the same year Batman came out. You had Lethal Weapon, number one. Die Hard, number one. I want to say there was another number one that became a huge four or five film franchise. You know, that was the birth of the franchises. I mean, they had been around, don't get me wrong, but that was like the explosion. Let me rephrase. That was the explosion of the franchises, but that was all in one summer. And you knew you got to go the summer. Like, oh my God, I have five movies to go to see this summer. And that was a lot. And now it's like, holy crap, if I wanted to go every night of the week, I would have a ton of movies to watch for 6 to 9 months of the year.
Well, and that's the thing is because if you put Star Wars Episode 7 in 2017 or even next year, if you would have released it 1 month later, would you have seen Star Wars twice or three or four times, or would you have watched it once, maybe twice, and then you're rolling into Deadpool, and then the month after that you're rolling into Captain America Winter Soldier? I think you're going to start losing those repeat viewings that people go see.
Well, yeah, I give you that. Yeah.
Well, I definitely think having a big film like Star Wars hit at the holidays is a big deal. Because everybody's, you know, college kids are on vacation, kids are out of school, you know, all these scenarios, people are in from out of town. Oh, you haven't seen Star Wars yet? What the hell? Let's go. You know, stuff like that. Like, you know, people are going to band together and go see it because it comes out around the holidays. That's a big deal. Like, I know there were people who were 2 weeks in, hadn't seen the film yet. One of my friends went to go see it with his father and his uncle. And I was like, they haven't seen it yet? What the hell are they doing? Like, I was like, what is going on? But I get it, you know, especially if you're somebody who, for you, movies isn't really a big priority in your life, which, exactly. Like a lot of people with children, busy lives, that kind of stuff. But yeah, you're going to, you know, there was a lot of repeat viewings of Star Wars. That doesn't happen all the time. I don't think I could count off on one hand how many times I've seen a film more than once in the theater. It's only been a handful of times. And a couple of times I've regretted it. Oh, dude, Return of the King. I got dragged out to it a second time on a date.
Oh, yeah, that's
and
tough.
And it was hot in the theater because, like, they had the heat cranked too high. And that is a 3.5-hour movie that is just way too long. And I'm a huge Tolkien fan, don't get me wrong. But I was like, I'm done. This is the worst of them. Oh.
I saw The Matrix multiple times. I can't even tell you how many times I saw The Matrix in the theater. But that The Matrix was a very pivotal movie for me at a very pivotal moment in my life. Mm-hmm. And there were one or two that I've probably seen. I can't even remember that I've probably seen multiple times. But typically, especially with my life now, it's here's the choice. If it's Marvel, it's opening night. As best I can make that happen. And my wife agrees with that. Then it's any other time of the year that's not Marvel. It's, hey, babe, what do you want to see? We can have a date night once every 3 months. You know, let's pick a movie you want to see. Well, she likes the Marvel stuff. Don't get me wrong. But, yeah.
That's another part of the conversation, though, too. Like, I remember growing up in the late 90s, early 2000s, I could go see a matinee for less than $5. You know what I mean? Yeah. I go see whatever I want. Yes. I went to see the special editions of the Star Wars films when they were re-released. My two best friends and I went, and our parents let us skip school. on those Fridays when they came out. And so we went and saw them at, you know, the 10:30 or 10:40 showing, the first showing on those days. And, you know, my parents gave me like a $20 bill and I was able to go buy my ticket, buy myself lunch and still have a little bit of BS money to spend on whatever. I think we were buying Star Wars cards or something at the time. Actually, I absolutely know that we were, because that was a big deal at the time. So, you know, for $20, I could see a film, eat lunch, and have extra money. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And nowadays, it's $10 plus for the ticket alone. And then if you get a drink or popcorn or something like that, the $20 bill will get you. Yeah. That's for one person. If you get a drink and popcorn, that's a $20 bill just gone, dude, just savaged.
Right? Back in the very, very late 90s, right at the early 2000s. I mean, it was 1999 when I started dating my wife. We could go out on a date, and $8 would get us a popcorn combo. And now going out for the – I'm talking about the two drinks and one large popcorn. Now it's $20.
Oh, yeah.
You know. But let me throw out tips for the movie going public. Two things, and it's not a sponsorship. I wish it was, because I'd love to get paid to say this, but I'm a huge fan of AMC chain theaters, because they have a really great rewards program. And without the rewards program, they've dropped their prices across the board, where like the IMAX is $12 prime time Friday night. You go any other time, and regular movies are $6 or $7 prime time. I'm talking about 2D, you know, screenings. And you go before 6 p.m., it's $5. You go on Sunday morning, it's like $4. So as a chain across the board, they have dropped their prices to get people in the door. However, you go past that box office, you go to their drink and popcorn is $16.
Yeah, so that's, they dropped ticket prices, but their concession prices have gone up.
Well, because the theaters don't make that much money on the ticket prices.
No, they don't. But
they make the money on the concession. But the other tip is, if you know people or you yourself drink Coca-Cola products, sign up for their free freaking Coke Rewards program. Grab those caps, grab the points off of the Coke boxes, because that's how I haven't paid for a movie. I think I finally paid for one this year just because I wanted to take my wife out. By God, I was going to pay for it to mess with her. But we've had date nights at least 2 to 3, if not 4 times a year, straight to the movie theater with Coke, drink, everything for free for 4 or 5 years now, because we do the Coke points. We have family members who drink Coca-Cola. We never buy Coke products just because it has points. But if we're neutral, then the points sway us. But those points build up fast, and you can go to the movies a lot on that stuff.
You know who drinks Coke? Deadpool. So back to Deadpool.
Well done, sir. Back to Deadpool.
That's a very nice ibid of you there.
Yes.
No. So, but what we two things that we've seen out of in recent news with Deadpool. We've seen the petition to get the PG-13 Deadpool for the young kid that wants to see it. While I commend them on the ingenuity of it and trying to get what they need, just have your parent take you.
I mean, that's how PG-13 is you have to have a parent's a guardian, unless you're 13 or older. Who the hell lets their kid under 13 go to a movie by themselves?
Yeah. Well, I used to all the time when I was a kid, but it was a different time.
Oh, yeah, same thing.
Sure.
Totally.
But, you know, maybe we'll see China joining the petition soon, since it can't be released in China.
Yeah, I saw that. The country of China has banned Deadpool because of all the violence.
That's a pretty big deal.
It is. No, that overseas market. I mean, because that's what everybody kept saying with Force Awakens. It was like, oh, these numbers are incredible, and we haven't opened in China yet. These numbers are incredible. We haven't opened.
But that's not unusual. People don't fully understand that there are multiple versions of any given movie at any given time, because they do have to change things for other countries to get that audience in there or to get past regulations.
Right, and they do, but this movie is unique in that they can't do it. The movie just gets devastated story structure wise, so there's no way to grade it down. And China's interesting, because they don't have a grading, or they don't have a rating system. It's either acceptable to show in this country or it's not, and they can't cut this one.
So what we're saying is Deadpool may surpass Zombieland for the most torrented movie of all time.
Yes, I can see it happening.
Because, you know, if I were to think of one country that torrents like a mofo, second, you know, America and China are the two that pop in the mind would be the countries. But you really got to think about outside of America, you don't get access to a lot of this stuff. So I'm sure other countries torrent like fools.
Our, you know, friend of the show, Nikolai, has he lives in Romania. He talks about, like, Netflix just came out in Romania. You know, I don't believe Hulu exists for them. You know, there's a lot of things on the internet are region locked, too. So even if you try to go to these sites, they're just locked out for you, especially like YouTube and stuff like that. That sucks, you know, like for these people in some of these smaller European countries and, you know, Asia and all over the place. If it doesn't get a major release in your country, you might not get a chance to see it, which is crazy. You know, it's one of those weird things where it's like, I don't know that I want to support piracy openly, but like at the same time, these people are going to go pirate things because they can't. There's no legal avenue for them to obtain this entertainment.
I mean, that was at the time I hosted a show called Bear Crawling when Zombieland was out, and that story hit about how it was the number one box office movie 2 weeks in a row at this point in junk time when the article came out, is also the number one torrented movie in the world 2 weeks in a row. And the writers canceled Zombieland 2, crying on the social media going, "Oh my God, you're stealing our work." I'm like, wait a minute. You just had the number one box office 2 weeks in a row. Celebrate. Awesome. Great movie. People are paying to go see this. And you hit for 100 million torrents or something. Some crazy million number torrents at the same time. Why are you crying? This means the world is celebrating your work. How do you get paid from that? Find new avenues to get it out there to the people. You're still making a bunch of money, and Zombieland 2 had been greenlit, and it was going to go. And they just had a pity party and stopped. I'm like, you blow my mind. You blow my mind when that's your reaction. As the artist, that's your reaction to it, instead of going, holy crap, look how awesome we are in this world. You know, I, for one, did pirate Zombieland and loved it so much, I drug all my friends to go see it. We paid full price and went to see it in the theaters. It was that awesome.
Yeah, I saw it in the theater, yeah.
You know, I get the argument to a point about the theft and the money, but come on, you don't think Star Wars has been torrented the full out of? And $1.87 billion?
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, like, some of these people that work in the industry, like, you know, some of them they've put their line in the sand and they're like, this is too much, you're stealing from us. And then you've had some others who go, like, for example, I know some of the writers for Game of Thrones, and I think Walking Dead as well. Those shows are immensely popular. Yep. They're pirated all the time because they're not on easy to get access to networks here in America per se. They're usually expensive packages and stuff like that.
Or the world, right?
Right. You know, I know for a fact one of the Game of Thrones guys was like, you know, the thing is, like, we know it's the most pirated television show in the world, and thank you. Like, they're kind of like, you know, like we. Obviously, they can't just say, like, you know, thanks for stealing from us. But at the same time, they're still like, that means something.
It does.
You know, that sends a statement that what you're putting out is quality. And it almost begs the question of, like, well, all right, if you're this network that has this popular show, or you're this studio with this film, and you can't reach a certain audience, why? Are you failing to reach – are you failing to explore enough options to reach the audience that wants to see your work, that wants to buy your product? Because it seems like people would, you know, be more apt to buy in if it was easy. And that's my big issue with HBO, for example. You know, here in America, if you want HBO, you've got to get it through a package, and almost every provider has a relatively expensive package. So you're either one of those people who are so gung-ho about a show like Game of Thrones that you pony up for the package for a couple months, or you don't. You know what I mean? And the alternative is to cheat, and that's not great. Yeah. So we've talked about this before. Like, I'm really happy to see some of the networks that have streaming services start to do a more a la carte approach, or start to offer, you know, okay, well, maybe you don't have to buy that whole big TV package. Maybe you can get this and explore our stuff. Yeah. And I think that's where the market needs to go. It's like, you know, you don't want to get lumped in with a bunch of other stuff that people don't necessarily want. If you position things correctly, people will pay. That it's been proven. I mean, look at the music industry, you know? I mean, you'll hear somebody like Vince Gill, who recently went on the record, is complaining about, well, you know, the quality of my art has been reduced to 99 cents for one of my songs. It's like, well, But the alternative is like people can actually get your music now.
Wait. You forgot to give his full title. Millionaire Country Artist.
Exactly.
Went on record.
Yep.
Because, dude, okay, this is a great shut the hell up moment. Go to patreon.com. And I'm not pitching our show. We don't have one up yet. But no, if you search Patreon, look at Night Attack is a show that's out there. They have a 50 cent or less reward level. And the majority of the over 2,000 people who contribute to them are in that level. Yet they get well over $2,000 a Tuesday night because those numbers add up very quickly. So when you're talking about why do you think iTunes settled on 99 cents? Because they scientifically did their research and realized that was the price point people were going to download and you could make millions on it.
Yeah, because $20 or so for on average 10 to 14 songs doesn't seem like such a good deal.
Where most of them are crappy and I only want the two that were hits.
Right. Oh, especially in pop music. You know, yeah. Pop music, pop country, stuff like that. There's generally only a couple tracks on an album that people are really into. Now, I've grown up to, and my whole adult life, I've listened to music where I love the whole album for the most part. If I'm going to buy the album, I'm going to explore the whole album. And I usually gravitate to artists that have, you know, their B-sides are as good as their hits. You know what I mean? But there's definitely music out there where it's like, oh yeah, there's the two hits on this album, and that's pretty much it.
So you know who listens to music? Deadpool. So all right, we're class and I do this. See, Wisdom, you're supposed to be roping us in, man. You're no Ibbot, sir. You are no Ibbot. But let me read this real quick. So fans in LA and New York, fans score tickets to a handful of special screenings of as yet unseen Deadpool footage. They wound up getting more than they bargained for. Instead of just a few new clips or even a look at a new scene or two, attendees at these screenings were treated to the entire movie, still marginally unfinished, as well as the presence of key members of the cast and crew. Granted, the unexpected nature of these screenings may color the initial reaction somewhat, but the general gist of what's coming out of these shows on both coasts is that Deadpool freaking rules, and the fans seem like they're more satisfied. And that somebody posted this. This is not me, but somebody posted this on Facebook. They said, whoever is in the marketing team behind this movie, they deserve a royalty off of this movie. They deserve that much money because the marketing for Deadpool has been so phenomenally awesome. It's just amazing. Now, I got to ask you two guys. Am I like a snooty geek when every time somebody goes, this is one of my favorite Marvel movies all time, going, it's not really a Marvel movie. I mean, it's a Marvel property, but it's a Fox movie. Am I too snotty on that one?
No. Yes.
I mean, you agree? Yes.
I'm gonna lean towards yes, because I mean, as we've talked about before, the foundation for the MCU stuff was laid by stuff like X-Men, and the Fox's take on X-Men and X2. Is pretty rock solid. Like, for their time, they're pretty good films. Now, they don't really hold up now. We go back and we look at them and we're like, oh, some of those lines were just truly awful. And, you know, there's some pretty bad special effects here and there. But nothing like, you know, Marvel Wolverine Origins, whatever, however it's called, you know, that garbage Wolverine movie. That last time Deadpool got some screen time.
It was Wolverine Origins. It was the first Wolverine standalone movie.
It's all Marvel, man. It's all Marvel characters. But it's really about how they handle it. That's why, like, I refuse to acknowledge that third X-Men film most of the time. X3 Last Stand, to me, that was like, when you butcher the source material and your movie sucks, like, and that's part of why your movie sucks too, then it's not a Marvel movie to me. You know what I mean? Then it's like, this is just loosely based on the property of Marvel. You know what I mean? I think it's okay to consider if they pull Deadpool off the way Deadpool is written in the books, it'll be fine. And I'd be happily throw the Marvel wreath around it.
Dude, can you imagine what the unrated director's cut would be like? Cause you know, a lot of times in this, especially in these kind of cases, you get that.
We're going to get
the sounds of it. It's going to be like 30 extra seconds.
Yeah, no, most of it made it. The shit we cut was just crap. Don't worry.
You're going to get the extra features with all the outtakes and all the, the multiple angles and all that kind of stuff, which is going to be sweet. I cannot wait, dude. I'm stoked to see this film. I'm stoked to see it come out on Blu-ray and check out all those extra features.
I'm a little pissed off at Amazon right now for not letting me pre-order the Super Ooper Collector's Edition already. You know, I would do that right now.
It's early. They probably don't have distribution set up or anything like that yet. It's really early.
No, I know. I'm just being a little facetious, but I totally would. If that was offered on Amazon, I'd pre-order the collector's edition right now. I haven't seen the movie. So Wisdom says we tend to run you over. Why don't you hit this other third story for us?
All right, so the voice cast for Justice League versus Teen Titans animated movie has been announced. And anybody that was worried about not getting enough John Bernthal in their life, here you go.
Oh, yeah, right?
Some big-name actors are joining DC's animated movie universe. John Bernthal, The Walking Dead and Daredevil, and Tasia Farmiga, America's American Horror Story, are among the bigger names involved with Justice League versus Teen Titans, a new animated movie out this spring on Blu-ray and DVD. This is going to be a Trigon control Justice League versus the Teen Titans. So we finally get to see some more adult Teen Titan content. So everybody that was missing, that's upset that Young Justice got canceled and is waiting for Young Justice Season 3, like me, this is going to tide us over, I think. This is where DC really excels, is these their movie.
Yeah, they're straight to DVD.
They're straight DVD stuff. Yeah. Animated.
Wow, dude, look at some of the names on this list. Yes. You got Rosario Dawson as Wonder Woman.
Yeah. All right. A lot of these guys are reprising roles from the previous ones. So.
Yep. Sean Astin is Nightwing. Yeah. Has he played him before?
Yes.
Okay. That's pretty shocking.
You skipped over Tomcat's own Jerry O'Connell as Superman.
Yeah, well, Jerry O'Connell's always doing.
Yeah, but it's like you can't see his face, man. Because as soon as you see his face, you're like, oh, this is a crap movie, isn't it? I mean, I love Jerry O'Connell. I'm a fan of Sliders. Sliders was a great cheesy sci-fi show, but the last couple things Jerry Connell's done on the big screen, Tomcats, which was horrible, and Piranha 3DD or 3D or whatever it was when they remade the Piranha film. Great guy movie, not a date night film.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
By the way, who put this Power Man 5000 reference in the notes?
Oh, that'd totally be me, man. I love Power Man 5000.
Oh, dude, I totally applaud that. Recently looked them up again to listen to them because I was listening to some 90s stuff.
I got to hear them live in concert.
Oh, good for you, man.
It was fun. They played their one song. And it was awesome.
Oh, they got a bunch of songs. That first album was full of
songs. Yeah, it absolutely was. It absolutely was. But yes, that's mine. So I don't know if we even announced it, but because it was – because it's Justice League versus Teen Titans, the teaser I put for the article was, this is what it sounds like when worlds collide, is what I put down. I'm very excited because DC does some amazing animated stuff, especially when it goes to Blu-ray. Back in the day, you know, if it went straight to DVD, it was a horrible sequel or some crap you don't want to watch, right? Mm-hmm. Cinderella 3, anybody? Well, y'all don't have kids, never mind. Not when DC does it. When DC does it, it's like watching a graphic novel. You know, you pay more for the graphic novel, right? Not just the regular book. You get the graphic novel. This is a step up. So when I hear they're doing something directly to DVD, I'm excited.
And they've definitely, they went through their growing pains with this. I mean, that first Superman Doomsday was not good. The best part of that movie was Kevin Smith making his "told you didn't need a giant spider" line. but aside from that, I mean, the movie wasn't that good. Wonder Woman was okay, and it seemed like every single one they did, it just got better and better. Now every single one is just a hit out of the park. Meanwhile, you look over on Marvel's side, and this form of the media, they're largely ignoring.
Yeah.
And I think it's a mistake on their part. But.
Oh, big time. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I mean, that DC has – this is the weird thing about DC is they've took what is largely considered to be the relative fringe media, television and animated standalone films, and they've crushed it. And they've been crushing the animated stuff for a long time. That is one of the things I think that has kept the brand alive, especially the Batman stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, all the Batman stuff that's come out over the years. I don't read Batman. I mean, I know who he is. I've watched all of the films. You know, the live-action films. I've seen a little bit of the 60s show. That one was rough.
Tell me, watch the 90s cartoon, that Z definitive.
Yes. Well, that's what I mean, yeah. And growing up, I did occasionally watch the 90s cartoon show. And then they've had a number of movies. So when I pick up one of those films, I don't really necessarily know what's going on. Like, I saw the Red Hood one. And that one blew me away, though. I was like, this is incredible. Like, holy crap. Why aren't people screaming from the rooftops about the really, really high quality animated stuff that's coming out from DC? And that, you know, further to go talk about, you know, the classic Teen Titans show is legendary for being really good. Not Teen Titans Go.
The original Teen Titans.
You know, Young Justice, we've talked about, is really good. The Green Lantern animated show. Yep. Was so good. Like, oh, dude, that show transcended its intent, man. Like, it got deep. I found myself caring about an AI's feelings and development. And, like, I was blown away by that series. So, yeah, DC has been crushing it. And Marvel has every opportunity to do that. When you do animated films, it frees up so much stuff. They could tie it into the MCU. They could decide not to. I think they should tie it into the MCU. I think they should use the animated films to fill gaps.
Yes. Yes. Talking about that, the best way animated was ever handled, in my personal opinion, was in it's not Pitch Black, it's a sequel to Pitch Black, it's Riddick. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Riddick. So when you bought the collector's edition of Riddick, which I did because I'm a huge fan of that whole storyline in that universe, and Vin Diesel, and they're working on another one, but I won't go into that. They did Dark Fury and they did a video game, so the video game led up to Pitch Black. And then Dark Fury was the in-between between Pitch Black and Riddick. And, oh, my God.
Chronicles of Riddick, you mean?
Yeah, Chronicles of Riddick. Sorry. The next one's called just Riddick, I think. But, yeah, the Chronicles of Riddick. But Dark Fury was Chronicles of Riddick, Dark Fury. And it's a 30-minute animated film that you only got originally. Now you can get it separately. But originally, you only got it when you got the collector's edition, whatever, which was why I bought it. And that was so well done. It just tied the films together. So, yeah, dude, you could totally fill in gaps with the Avengers. And then you package it together. That's how you sell more of this stuff and get it more. What's the number one rule of collecting? Make people want it.
Yep.
Yeah.
And people, I think the reason we don't scream and shout about the Red Hood or about Planet Hulk is because we don't know it exists. And one day you go, oh, crap, what is this?
The other thing is too, like, oh man, I just lost my train of thought. Damn it. Oh man,
sorry about that.
I just crashed. I had it.
This is the brain fart episode.
Yeah. We're talking about the animated films. You brought up why didn't Marvel do more of this? Why don't they tie it in directly to the Avengers? And I mean, you could do so many animated shorts between Ant-Man, Guardians of the Galaxy, all the films that are out there that would tie them together. Okay, you're back on track.
I got it. Yeah. Okay, so here's the thing. Look at what happened with the original Clone Wars. They were bridging the gap, and they did it in, you know, that Samurai Jack style art. Because not a lot of people acknowledge that series anymore.
Should. That was always meant to be canon.
And it was good. It was pretty good. I mean, it was stylistic, but it was pretty good. Yep. I mean, and then we got the much more... the Korean style animation one that came out, you know, later. And that is also very good. Yeah. And it works. I mean, that is all canon. Well, at least the second Clone Wars is canon.
And that one always baffles me, because when the last scene of the last episode of something ties directly into the opening scene of the third movie, you can't say that's not canon.
Right. So I mean, you can do it. It's been done, and it's been done well. I mean, I don't think they ever would have done the second Clone Wars if the first Clone Wars wasn't successful. It might not have been the smash hit that they hoped for, which is why they didn't continue to do it in that style, but it worked.
And I think that's what works, is do it Netflix style, where you have the series. You don't have to dump it all at once, but you do a closed series. You have a start, a middle, and a finish, and that's how this is built, right? Mm-hmm. You're not looking for a 10-year run challenging The Simpsons or anything like that. You're looking for story combined. So, yeah, you're going to run over maybe 1-2 seasons, fine. But have it always be that story arc that will end, period, and lead into the next movie or lead into the next whatever.
So, Paul, if you liked the Red Hood, you need to see Batman versus Robin, which is lead into this other one that comes out today, Batman Bad Blood. So those three are all interrelated, same storyline, same universe, right? Same reality. And then the best news out of all of this is that we're going to finally get the Killing Joke.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right.
About that. And Hamill's going to do Joker, and I believe Kevin Conroy is supposed to be doing Batman. So we're going to get the quintessential Batman and Joker for that. So.
Which is great. I'm so glad that Hamill's come back to it, because I know he got soured on it at one point because he got kind of tired of it, but he is absolutely – he's so good. And he was so good on Flash this year too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I mean, just like I'm so glad Hamill's back, man. Like, yep. You know what I mean? Like it's – we talked about it before, that his transformation too physically, like seeing – it almost seems like he's grasped life again. You know, mm-hmm. by the reins, and he's like ready to go, because it looked like he was just kind of like, you know,
he got to go home. He got to be Luke Skywalker again. Why? What wouldn't lift your spirits about that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because I had an interesting conversation with my roommate recently about the fact that like how the Star Wars films kind of like outside of Harrison Ford really kind of impeded the development of all of their careers. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because they were such iconic roles.
Yep.
It was difficult for them to break out of that.
And at that point in time in movie history, that was unheard of. Taking mm-hmm. unknown people and having such an iconic role that defines your character that you mm-hmm. can't get work anymore.
Well, and luckily things have kind of changed in that regard. You can do a big franchise nowadays and still do like art films or fun side stuff. I cannot wait to see what Daisy Ridley does after her current commitment. You know what I mean? Yeah. Once she gets free of Star Wars, and because she's going to be huge. You know, she's proven that she can carry a film. I can't wait to see her grow and do a different character, some different characters and stuff. Same thing goes with John Boyega. I saw him in Attack the Block. I thought he was great. I can't wait to see him go on.
Yeah. Okay, that was him.
Yeah, right. he was the, you know, the head of
the street gang or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, the kids who responded to the alien. Yeah, gotcha.
Which is an awesome film. That is a film
yes.
that flew under the radar. That was such a fun movie.
That was great.
Yeah, and like, you know, despite being kind of hilarious and like whimsical at times, it was also kind of scary and realistic at points too. Like it had real repercussions. Great film. If you haven't seen it, Attack the Block. It's a British film. It's a creature feature, but it's a lot of fun. Really, really well done. So, yeah, I mean, I can't wait to see these guys, like, go crazy. And I'm glad to see Carrie Fisher's been working a lot more lately. She's been popping up on TV shows and stuff like that, which is great. She was on the second season of Legit, Jim Jeffries. Second or third season? I can't remember. The last season, because he got canceled. But she was awesome on that, because she played something really outside most of our comfort zone for her. Fantastic that these people are coming back. Fantastic that we have a new batch of people that are going to go forward. Really, really excited about that.
All right, so we've got a few more little things to hit. Some speculation and some talking points, and they all tie together. The speculation, I haven't clicked on any of it because I felt like it was clickbait, and I really just try to avoid that. But I've been hearing rumors on the web of Star Wars and Marvel movie universes may collide a little bit. Not collide like a bad thing, but like merge a little bit. They may bleed over into each other.
Stan, I think all the stories come directly from comments that Stan Lee made, talking about, hey, he didn't see why the Avengers couldn't team up with Star Wars universe in some way, shape, or form. I don't know that there's been anything official, but from what I've read, it's just been Stan pining.
Well, okay, so mentally, it could happen. I mean, it's a huge universe. Guardians of the Galaxy have proven that. And it's just Star Wars is in a galaxy far, far away, right? Mm-hmm. But for fans, I myself would find that a little weird, wouldn't you guys?
Yeah, totally. I'm not such a huge fan for smashing things together like that. Like, I'm really not for smashing Marvel and DC together either. I like, you know, what we talked about before the show, that run of, what are they called again?
Amalgam.
Yeah, Amalgam. I liked that run. I thought that was really interesting because it took from both sides, you know what I mean? And it did something interesting. But I'm not really for, like, I don't want to see Iron Man duking it out with Superman or anybody like that. Like, it's just not my thing. Like, I like the world separate. You know what I mean? Go ahead. I mean,
I thought you were going to say you didn't want to see Iron Man duking out with Han Solo. Well, you know, that's not going to happen.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, they could do, if they do something where they just do like an animated thing with it or whatever, and they're just kind of goofing around and it's a for fun thing, and it's like a one shot, that's fine. But if they try to like bring the two universes together officially long term, that is a huge mistake. And that's going to cause a lot of like just ugly ripples. That people will not go for that, I don't think. The Star Wars fans who are, you know, strictly Star Wars fans will lose their lid. The comic book fans will be the same way. Yeah, it's just not a good idea.
I trust in Disney and Marvel's judgment. Disney rarely does bad things, Frankenweenie being aside. horrible original movie. I never even bothered with the second, the claymation version. But I would with hesitancy go, I'm going to get in line for this film. I'm going to see what happens because I trust Marvel from everything that they've done up until this point and Disney, everything they've done up until this point. But I'm with you, Klotz. I just, it's two things that are beautiful apart. There's no real need to put them together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
So it's also one of those things, like from a business standpoint, you want to diversify. And while there's a lot of overlap, there's also a lot of people who care about one thing over the other. You know what I mean? I know comic book fans that are friends of mine that are like, I don't give a crap about Star Wars. They're few and far between, but they exist. More, I know Star Wars fans who are like, yeah, I don't really care for comic books or in comic book characters and properties.
Right, right.
So you want to stay diverse, and you don't have to cross the streams. I mean, come on.
Don't cross the streams, man. So that leads us into something that's going to get Chris Wisdom all fired up because he brought these talking points to the table. Tell us about your new lightsaber obsession, sir.
Oh, man, my new lightsaber obsession.
Wait, that's an Osinico. Oh, man.
Oh, man.
All right, so everybody knows that there's different levels of lightsabers that, just at Target that you can buy. There's the flip-out lightsabers. There's the lightsabers that have lights and sounds. And there's those new Nerf ones that have like a broom handle inside them, so they still hurt, so they're fun to hit your brother with. All the way up into the light effects lightsabers, and I can't remember the other big name that do these custom made battle tested lightsabers. So they're more like the artifacts lightsabers that you can get that are in the $100-$150 price range. But these go up in price. I think they start base model at like between $150 and $200. And then depending on what you add to it, whether it's, you know, lights or sounds, the hilts are changeable. They have all these different custom hilts, at least 24 hilts per site. And you can get in different colors. And, you know, those top out in like the $500 or $600 range. Well, I just ran across one the other day that I have never seen the level of detail in a lightsaber, in these custom lightsabers, as I did on this site, that when he opened up the hilt and you saw the insides, it's like you're looking at the old what were those magazines, the Star Wars magazines that gave you a view of the inside of like the vehicles and the weapons and stuff like that. I mean, it all looks functional. Nothing in there is nothing in there looks artistic.
Unnerved. Yeah. You're an effing nerd. Along with a big effing nerd.
But this thing it's a Gray Flex saber by Martin, and the thing when you by Martin Baer, and you open it up, and it even has the focusing crystal is the level of detail that is in this thing. It's not just a light emitter in the middle in the base of the handle in the base of the pommel that shoots up through the lenses. It focuses through an actual like aquamarine quartz crystal. It's so sick, and the thing can pop in and out. And these got pictures on this site of people wearing it like jewelry. I hands down, there'll be a link at the bottom in the notes. But man, check the doobly doo, right?
Then, what's your next level up of Uber geekdom, sir?
Oh, holy crap! AR-500 Armor, which is an armor, a body armor company. They make custom body armor, like plate carriers and vest, bulletproof vests, things like that. Well, they're getting together with several different producers. Yes. They started this thing called the Galactac Project, and they are making functional Mandalorian armor. And I don't not to say that it's got flamethrowers and everything attached and that, you know, your own jetpack, but it's
Mandalorian. Oh, I totally cosplay if that came
mediocre.
Yeah.
Mandalorian inspired tactical gear. So you have the classic T visor. You have the same Mandalorian the cheekbone looking visors that are on these and the chest pieces and the shoulder plates, they're all very Boba Fettish for more layman terms.
Did you just coin a term, Boba Fettish?
I did.
yeah, Boba. I think I know a few people who have that fetish.
Yes.
Nice.
And there's the title.
there you go. I saw the pictures you posted, or you posted the link. I saw the pictures. I will say, I can appreciate when people do cosplay well. I can appreciate when they put love and art into their costumes. I can appreciate that there's zero about that I ever want to do, ever. And I saw the armor. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. And then wait a minute. Does it shoot weapons? Because then you got me. If I could do, you know, I'm talking about controlled burst class before you go crazy on me like I'm going to burn a house down or something. If I could do little flamethrowers or, you know, give me a little jetpack, even if it's a fake jetpack, they'll only lift me up like an inch off the ground. Give me something. Something. Can I shoot a net of bolas out of people? Give me something.
Yeah, see, then okay. I'd do it. So I shared that article link on Facebook, and I titled it as, but does it have jets? Yeah. as a throwback to the previous conversation we had on this show about the backpack that my roommate bought that doesn't have jets and is therefore an inferior product. But I think the really crazy thing about this is functional tactical body armor. This is meant for military application. At least that's the intent behind the development of it.
It is, and it's actually a step up because the base model was he had developed for airsoft. So, and I think you can get a set of his airsoft. It's this armor, but it's lower grade for $325. So you can get the starter kit on his website right now.
You're talking about the filthy casual kit is what you're talking about? Yeah. Right. Okay.
But this is being shopped to actual government contractors to develop this kind of stuff. I mean, these guys, Heckler & Koch, SOG Knives, Tools, Surefire, all of these guys supply the military. Mm-hmm. So they're going to do like a real DLC, see how this looks. And that's what's got me excited.
You know what? To finish this out, it is exciting. I will say, I mean, it caught my attention. I actually looked through it. I was like, all right, this is some cool stuff right here for sure. But the last thing that's got me excited, we're going to redo the Wheel of Fate next week because all the stuff's kind of outdated at this point. But Daredevil season 2 is coming with Punisher. I'm very, very excited about it. Of course, there's many rumors in the works, legitimate rumors in the works of if it does well, maybe a Punisher spinoff, which I think would be fine. Actually, no, I'll tell you back. I think it'd be awesome to do that. But what I just learned recently was, you know, Batman v Superman. I hate that. Batman and Superman is coming out. It's like the end of March, right? March 28th or something like that. I don't remember the exact date. But I will be going opening night to see that movie. Daredevil Season 2 drops 2 weeks ahead of that, on like March 18th or something. It's very, very close. We're within, 6 weeks? It's less than 8 weeks away for Daredevil Season 2. I'm so excited to start binge-watching that. What about you guys?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Falling in sick the next day because I'm going to be tired.
Yeah, it's
I'm coming down with something.
The joys of being a contractor, man. It's like, nope, my schedule says nope, I can't do that. I'm going to see this stuff. I'm surprised. I'm actually impressed with myself, to be honest, about how fast I can binge watch these things with a family and a life and earning income. And, you know, not having the first season of Daredevil dropped when I went to California. So it was like, do the conference during the day, at night, lock myself in the room and watch 3 episodes before I pass out. And then every night,
hey, McFall, you want to come out for some drinks?
Nope. That's busy. And actually, I was in negotiations with MCU Cast on getting them onto the network at the time. So it was like, damn it, man, make this fast. You're interrupting my Daredevil. And Matt was drunk and I was drunk and we're negotiating the deal drunk, both trying to watch Daredevil. So we're speed reading through this thing. It was so much fun. Jessica Jones, I was just like, hey, babe, aren't you tired? All right, cool, I'll put you to bed. All right, now I can watch Jessica Jones, you know, 1 or 2 episodes before I go to bed. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
Daredevil, man. That just got greenlit for the second season.
I know! Yep. That is going to be so epic. What are we going to do, man? It was supposed to be you drop a Daredevil and then you drop Jessica Jones. Then it was supposed to, then after that, it was going to be Iron Fist and Luke Cage. And now it's like season two of Daredevil and season two of Jessica Jones. And we still got to get Luke Cage. And we might add Punisher. And oh my God, every month, just drop me a new one, Netflix. That's all I'm saying. I will never watch anything else on Netflix if you just do that.
Oh, I don't think they want you to do that. Yeah. Well, maybe.
I will pay a Marvel freaking premium. I will pay you more money to give me more Marvel. You know, Netflix doesn't care. See, that's great. The beauty of Netflix and the beauty of Hulu, it's a flat fee. You don't have to watch jack crap. You're paying the fee every month. And the way they get more subscribers is to come up with great stuff like this for sure.
Oh, yeah.
The original content. And by, I got to tell you, dude, my list on Hulu is like 20 shows. At best. And most of those are DC and some are Marvel because Marvel doesn't have many TV shows on air right now. My Netflix list is Marvel. And my kids put stuff on there. My wife put some stuff on there, whatever. My part of the list is very minimal because that's all I watch on Netflix anymore. They have so much great Marvel stuff on there that you can go and rewatch the movies. You can go rewatch the animated stuff. It's
it's awesome. I mean, we really are in the golden age of modern television. I mean, our parents' generation will talk about the golden age of television, but for us, it's never been better. I mean, there's so many shows to watch. There are too many shows. Like, people are like, oh, have you watched this show? It's so good. And I'm like, oh, man, like, ah, it's kind of like debating having like your third child kind of thing. I'm like, I don't know that I can stretch myself out that thin. I mean, there's lots of good shows. Like, there's shows that are showing up on Amazon and a few of the other outlets. And I'm just like, Hulu and Netflix kind of got me locked down, man. Like,
That's the world we're building with Giant Size Team Up is being the driving force behind it. I have to pick stuff based on comic books, you know, in media, because that's what's driving our network. And I hear about the show Into the Badlands on AMC. I hear it's so epic. Well, one, I can't watch it because they're not making it easy for me to access. It's not on Hulu. Therefore, either I have to wait till you sell it to Netflix or I'm not going to get it right now, period. I just don't have time. But then it's like, it's not based on the comic book. And I've got I've got Legends of Tomorrow coming out this week. I've got The Flash season, what is it, 3 or 2.5 or whatever coming out this week. I've got Arrow coming back this week. I don't even watch Gotham because, God, I don't have time for that.
Oh, dude, you are missing out.
I know I am. But there's, like you said, there's so much time in a day that you could do this stuff. It's like,
speaking of Legends of Tomorrow, you understand that you have an appointment tonight, right?
No. I catch myself on Hulu. It's tomorrow night for me.
Well, I don't know. But I don't know if they're going to do that. They're doing that preview tonight of Legends of Tomorrow, and it's got a preview of Batman v Superman and Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if they're going to put that on Hulu or not.
I'll just catch that on Reddit tomorrow. Yeah.
Well, that's my thing, too. Is I do have a cable box I absolutely don't use. Okay. I pay for cable subscription merely to get a discount on my internet. That's it. That box is in the closet, literally. But I'm not even sure if CW is CW is listed on my subscription. But let's wrap this up. I'll start with you, Chris Wisdom. What are you reading, watching, or playing?
You know, right now I'm preparing for the X-Files miniseries to come out, so I'm rewatching. Just pure binge watching some X-Files when I'm not actively watching something else. Everything else is kind of on hold. I did pick up that new The Worst X-Man Ever comic book. It just started. I believe it's going to be a 6-issue miniseries, and it was really good. It's about this kid that he finds out his parents are mutants. And he's like the most ordinary, underachieving kid in school. He's just like, he wants something in his life. And he finds out his parents are mutants. He's like, oh my God, that's awesome. Am I a mutant? And they're like, oh, we're going to go find out today. We're taking you to the Xavier Institute. They're going to run some tests. And then he finds out that he's got the worst mutant power ever. So I suggest picking that up. It was pretty good. And then Batman... The Dark Knight 3, Master Race, I've been reading that too as far as new stuff. And then I always pick up Walking Dead. But that's as far as current stuff, that's what I'm doing right now.
Awesome. Klotz?
I have been playing Guild Wars 2 lately. Got into that recently. Also, Diablo 3 Season 5 just came out. Just got fired up on that last night for the first time. So been messing around with that. Watching lately, you know, been on a break from most of our shows. They're all just starting to come back now. What I wanted to talk about, RoboCop movie, the recent one. Watch that. That was a really good
movie. It is.
Really good movie. I was really surprised. But then when you see who's in it, like, you know, go check it out. You'll be surprised at some of the actors that are in it. You know, these aren't like chumps. Yesterday, I couldn't sleep, so I got up kind of early and I ended up watching Galaxy Quest because it was, I was reminded of that film because, you know, Alan Rickman passed away, just this past week, which is, you know, a real shame. You know, rest well, brother. Yeah. So I watched that and I got a kick out of that because when I saw it, when it first came out, when I was a kid, I wasn't really informed enough on like Star Trek and everything to really get it. But now I totally get it. And it's a lot better and a lot funnier now. And Sigourney Weaver, oh my God, looked amazing in that film. Whew. Sorry. The horn dog at me just kind of come out there for a second. I mean, she's all dolled up for it. It's just like, wow. And then I also watched yesterday the CBGB movie, which also had Alan Rickman play the lead that I did not know about. I didn't know that he was in that. I literally fired the movie up, and then it's like going through the opening credits, and it's like Alan Rickman. And then it lists a bunch of other people off, which there are a ton of awesome cameos in that movie. If you're into, you know, underground, you know, the roots of punk rock and all that whole scene, you know, if you're into rock and stuff like that, it's a great movie to watch to see some of that, you know, some of the story of that early stuff. It's based around Hilly Crystal. Really fun movie. Really good performances in that. And I was just kind of blown away. And it just made me really, really sad that we lost Alan Rickman, David Bowie recently as well. And also, just before the end of the year, we lost Lemmy from Motorhead. So I've been kind of bummed out lately. Been listening to a lot of Bowie musically too, to, you know, appreciate again. His new album is freaking incredible. By the way, if you are a Bowie fan, check out his new album that came out right before he passed. I mean, the guy put an album out on his birthday and then died like 2-3 days later. It's insane. And he knew the end was coming. So that album is full of some pretty deep, deep stuff. But it was really good. It's, you know, excellent. That's what I've been up to.
You know, I always remember The Labyrinth and his role there. But you want to see Rickman at one of his best roles ever? Netflix Snowcake.
Okay.
Carrie Ann Fisher, him, and was it Sigourney? I think it's Sigourney Weaver again. Is in that.
I'll check that out. Sure. I've never heard of it, so it's got to be. I'll take it.
Oh, it's a freaking art. It was not art film. It's like an independent film that is just dealing with a mental illness and midlife crises. And oh my God, dude. It's good. It is zero sci-fi for everybody listening to this show. It is not comic book related. It has nothing to do with Galaxy Quest or any of his sci-fi stuff. It is straight, well written, well acted, independent film about mental health and medication, and it's amazing. So, what have I been watching? Well, tomorrow, really, I've got dates with all kind of hot shows coming on. Tonight is the premiere of Agent Carter's coming on. But I've been watching Undateable. Is a very fun comedy show. But by the way, if you haven't seen Star Wars, you beware. They spoiled the crap out. That was 3 weeks after the movie. But even when he did it, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe you just did that. Dude. Yep. That's like one of those things that could go decades and not get spoiled, you know? It's like, oh, you haven't seen Star Wars from 10 years ago? Oh, I'm not going to tell you what happens. You got to go watch it. And they spoiled it. So be careful. But my wife and I have actually gotten into another, as much as I rant about CBS, I'm pretty sure this is another CBS show, Elementary, with Lucy Liu and Johnny Lee Walker. And Johnny, he was best known, or my mind, I first saw him in Hackers. Amazing, great movie I just lost her name. Big lips, hot actress.
Angelina Jolie.
Thank you. Angelina Jolie played an 18-year-old.
Isn't he the one that was in Trainspotting?
He was in Trainspotting. Yeah. Yep. Great stuff. Dude, his acting is – I just cannot take my eyes off his fingers sometimes. He does this twitch as Sherlock Holmes, and it's just so natural for him. to do that all the time.
Awesome.
It's crazy. So my wife and I, we just finished up the first season of Elementary on Netflix, and we're going to be jumping right into season two, and it is so well done. I want to thank Mike Woodard for pushing me into watching that and suggesting it. That's what I'm on. And Sherlock Holmes has had comics in the past. Go find those. What am I playing? Marvel Avengers Alliance 2 on the beta on my tablet. I got to say, I do take quite pride when I'm out doing my public work, and I host trivia, I host karaoke and those kind of things. So it's like I ask a question, I do a bit of a show, and then I hit the music and I wait for them to answer. And so I've got my tablet up. And anytime somebody comes up from grown men, the little kids are, ooh, what is that you're playing? The beta of MAA 2 that you can't get, but I have it. You know, but I do sell the crap out of it. People are getting excited. But that's mostly what my game time is spent on, is that and an old Xbox 360 game that I'm on, which is Dungeon Siege 3, is it? Dungeon Siege 3, maybe? I forget right now off the top of my head, but yeah. So, all right. With all that being said, we've got this show under wraps, I do believe. So check us out next week with Brian Ibbett coming back and more news, more opinions, more awesome stuff. Check us out on GiantSizeTeamUp.com. GiantSizeTeamUp.com/breakingthepanel. And of course, blogtalkradio.com/breakingthepanel. And hey, guess what? We've got a network page on Blog Talk Radio. So all the podcasts that are associated with us, you can find those directly on the Blog Talk Network page as well. That's a pretty cool deal. And then find us, you know, next year. You know, we'll be big enough and Marvel will have us at the red carpets and everywhere else. Until then, we've given you a whole lot to think about and a whole lot to go back and watch. Start emailing us, tagging us up, and getting your opinions in on the show. We'll be back again next week.